Good afternoon, America, and welcome to the Dean's List. I'm Dean Bowen. You are listening to America Out Loud Talk Radio. How is everybody doing? How are you? How's your spring break going? Mine is going fabulously, absolutely fabulous. I just, it's just nice to take a break every now and then, and especially at the start of spring with snow on the ground in Michigan. Don't mind it at all. Absolutely love Michigan. You get a taste of every single season. Love it. There are some things in Michigan that, I don't necessarily love. That, I read this report the other day that our wonderful government here in the state of Michigan is offering $500 to any residents who want to open up their doors to migrants, to illegals. Yeah, we'll give you $500 if you want to open up your basement. You have a spare bedroom? How about you let an illegal move in? The state of Michigan will give you $500 if you willingly break the law and invite an illegal. I mean, sure, you'll have to sleep with one eye open, but I mean, come on, that's worth $500, right? I mean, the state itself is beautiful. The people that run it, not so much. I just have a hard time with the incompetence. I have a hard time with the way the left has set out to destroy things in this country and do it on purpose and then pass it off as if we are buffoons, as if the people are just clueless and don't see what's going on. Now maybe they think that's the case because they've destroyed education so much, so deeply. They have done their best to annihilate it, just set it on fire. I mean, we've talked about it. We've covered it at length, and we will continue to do so because speaking out against the destruction of education in this country is the one thing that needs to happen, and it needs to happen in mass. It really does. This is a direct result of education being dumbed down. The fact that our governor here in Michigan and those in government here in Michigan have the nerve, have the gall, have the gumption to offer $500 to residents in Michigan if they'll open up their home to illegals and just think that we're going to be okay with it is a testament. It's a testimony to the belief that they have in their job of dumbing down education. They believe that they have succeeded. And granted, in a large part, they have all over the country. Largely, the left, the states on the left, they've succeeded in this endeavor. But it's time that we push back. It's time that those of us that are awake and those of us that are actually competent and those of us that enjoy using our brains for intellectual and logistical and rational purposes, it's time that we stand up and say something about it. So let's take Washington, for example. Washington and Oregon, holy cow. These two states are leftist bastion models of what not to do. And it's my fear here that Michigan just wants to follow suit. The leftists that run Michigan, they just... So this article coming out of Washington, I made a momentary reference to this the other day. It's been sitting in my stack, and I've just been dying to get to. There are so many things in the stack here that some things I want to get to, some things I'm holding off on because they're just too ugly. There's too much Marxism involved. But I know that we've got to talk about it because we have to expose it. You have to shine the light of truth, as we say, across the educational landscape, and this is part of it. But this article here says Washington State ditches bar exam over racism. The bar exam is too racist. Can't have it. It's just racist. It's just, oh, we're going to offer alternatives for prospective lawyers instead of the bar exam. It's just, those who want to practice law in Washington State will no longer have to pass the bar exam, the article says. It's the state's highest court has made this ruling. At the highest court in the land of Washington State, they've decided, okay, potential attorneys, no more. You don't have to take this bar exam. And why? Because we need to reduce historical barriers that non-white aspirants purportedly face. Yes, if you're not white and you want to take the bar exam, historically, it's a barrier for you. What is this? This is so insulting. It is so degrading that people in Washington, on some level, are buying this. That's why we see it's an example of the education being dumbed down and succeeding, is that there are people here in Washington that buy this bunk. And they don't even realize the insult that is being made to individuals of color. But they can't pass the bar exam because they're not white? This, my friends, it's appalling. In a pair of orders handed down just recently, March 15th, the Washington Supreme Court approved three alternative pathways to lawyer licensure, making the state the second in the nation to move away from traditional testing for law graduates. Take a guess at what the first is. Go ahead. If you guessed Oregon, boom, you nailed it. Oregon and Washington are just, let's just be leftists together. One option is a new apprenticeship program for law school graduates who would work under the supervision of a qualified attorney for 6 months. During that time, the graduates must also complete three courses of standardized coursework. All right, I mean, that might not be so bad. That's what it used to be back in the day, you know, when in colonial times, this is how attorneys entered law. They mentored with a qualified attorney for a period of time and studied under a qualified attorney. Do these individuals that despise quote unquote colonialism, do they know they're going back to colonial times? Do they understand they're promoting colonialism? All the irony here is so rich because they despise colonialism. They will lambaste white people as being white colonialists, but yet they, and their desire to, the irony here in their thought process that they believe that they are making the livelihood of law, of attorneyism, of becoming an attorney, they're making this so accessible that they will say the bar exam is racist and therefore not everybody has to take it anymore because it's an historical barrier to people of color. Yet they'll go back to a colonial form of becoming an attorney, and that's having an attorney mentor. Oh, the irony, but they don't get it. They don't understand. They don't see it. I mean, because there is also, while things are happening on purpose to destroy the country, to destroy the legal field here, to dumb it down, to make it, there is a level of incompetence that exists with them. They don't understand history. They don't understand that what they're doing is historical in terms of this colonial mode of becoming an attorney. They don't get it. And therefore, they're missing out on the the rich enjoyment of irony. All right. A separate option would require law students to complete 12 qualifying skills coursework credits and 500 hours of work as a licensed legal intern before graduation, then submit a portfolio of this work to waive the bar exam. All right. There's also an option for law clerks who are not attending law school. This would allow them to become lawyers without taking the bar exam by completing standardized education courses under the guidance of an attorney and 500 hours of work as a licensed legal intern, because they're just not smart enough to take the bar exam. I'm sorry, they're just not. They just don't have the mental capacity. Okay, are you going to go to Washington to have to get an attorney? Are you going to hire somebody from Washington who does not have the mental capacity to pass the bar exam? I wouldn't. But here we are. You know, we have destroyed education in Washington. I mean, we've destroyed it. We've just gone after it with flaming torches and clubs and pitchforks. We just want to tear it down. And this is the result. This is what we've got. Now we're passing this business off, and people are going, okay. Okay, this sounds pretty great. On top of that, licensed attorneys from outside of the state now only need 1 year of experience to be eligible for a Washington license. The previous threshold was 3 years. Why would you want a Washington license? If you're an attorney, which I'm not, but I'm not an attorney, but if you are, why would you want a license to practice in Washington if you're from outside of the state? I mean, there's probably some valid reasons. There's maybe some highfalutin businesses or people, whether they're highfalutin or not, that don't want to hire an incompetent Washington attorney. So they need to go somewhere else and they need to find someone who can practice in the state. Okay. I mean, I understand why there would be a demand there now after watching what Washington is doing to the state. But I mean, if I'm an attorney, I don't know that I want I don't know that I want to be associated with Washington. The state is also permanently reducing the minimum score to pass the bar. So not only do you not have to pass the bar, but let's say you want to pass it. You used to have to get a 270. Now it's only a 266. We're going to drop it 4 whopping points. Ooh, 4 points. A standard first lowered during the COVID-19 pandemic. Oh, so they first lowered the standard during COVID-19 because that gave them permission. That gave leftists permission to lower standards across the board. COVID-19, we got to lower our standards. We're in a pandemic. We must lower the standards to everything. All educational standards, just throw them out the window. Well, we just got to be done with it. I mean, that's what happened in Oregon. That's how Oregon ended up, you know, no longer needing graduation requirements because COVID-19 came and they were like, oh, we can't have standards during this pandemic. Oh, I don't get it. Those who still wish to take the bar exam will be given this new updated version that addresses many of the identified flaws and focuses on real-world skills and practices. Starting in the summer of 2026, they're going to get a new bar exam that addresses many of the identified flaws. What are the identified flaws? Because we're told the bar exam is racist. So are those the identified flaws? We finally identified the problem with the bar exam. It's racist. And we're going to have a new bar exam that identifies the racism of the old and focuses on real-world skills and practices, not the old-world skills and practices of racism. No, the new world. The real-world skills and practices of what? Because now what's, you know, the skills and practices now are stupidity. They are. They're stupidity. Or, or they're anti-racism, which means racism in reverse. Is this now the new real world skills and practices? Is it going to be racism in reverse? If you live in Washington, you got work to do. Now, if you live in Washington and you're listening to this show, or you're listening to anything on America Out Loud, then you've got a little bit of common sense about you, and you've got work to do. You've got a job to do, and you've got to muster up people. You got to go after it. You got to get into a grassroots movement. Link arms with somebody. Do it. Lock arms with an individual out there or a group, because you're going to need numbers. Because you are up against a level of stupidity that has not been heretofore seen in a long time. Let me put it that way. The court's order did not set a timeline for all the changes, but directed the Washington State Bar Association to create a committee to work on implementation. I mean, we don't know what this is going to look like. I mean, we're just the Supreme Court here. We don't make these detailed decisions. We decide what's going to happen. Then you guys figure it out. We'll leave it up to the Bar Association to make a committee. And the Bar Association, well, they'll go to work on it. Come on, they're smart people. Oh, the decision follows recommendations made by the Bar Licensure Task Force, which was created by the Supreme Court in 2020. To examine alternative paths to becoming a licensed attorney in the state. So as soon as the pandemic hit, the Supreme Court was like, yeah, this is our move. Let's go. This is our opportunity. We can make alternative paths. I mean, because the bar exams are racist and the pandemic and COVID-19 and, you know, let's just go through the list. After 3 years of study, the task force recommended getting rid of the mandatory bar exam, which it claimed to have disproportionate impacts on examinees of color and first-generation examinees. We just got to get rid of it. I mean, you just got to. The exam as it stands, and here's a quote from task force member Jordan Couch. Jordan said this back in October when briefing the court on the recommendation. Jordan said, again, I don't know if Jordan's male or female, but I'm going to pretend Jordan's a man. The exam as it stands right now is not doing the job we all believe it was intended to do. What it does do is prevent people of color and historically marginalized groups from practicing law. It's racist. I don't know how an exam can be racist, but in this world, in the world that the left lives in, anything can be racist. A rock can be racist. A tree, an animal, a vegetable, probably, a fruit, anything, a building, construction material, a pencil, you name it. Anything in their warped way of thinking has the ability to be racist. To back its point, the task force cited a 2021 study by the Legal Education Wing of the American Bar Association. Well, the American Bar Association itself is a leftist rag, so their legal education wing is probably just as progressive. And the study found white law graduates were almost 40% more likely to pass the bar exam than their black peers. That means the bar exam is racist. White test takers remained the group with the highest first-time passage rate of 83%. And then they go through the list. Asian, 75. Hispanic, 69. Blacks, 57. Native American, 60. So that obviously the bar exam is just racist. It's a pathetic thing. It's a horrible thing. It should just go. The task force blamed this disparity in outcomes on racism and classism that were supposedly embedded into the standardized test, which it argued to not be a valid measure of competence in the first place. All right. How is it not a valid measure of competence? If it's asking questions about the law, how is it not a valid measure of competence? Somebody help. Help me here. In addition to the racism and classism written into the test itself, the time and financial cost of the test reinforce historical inequities in our profession. Despite these issues, data indicates that the bar exam is at best minimally effective for ensuring competent lawyers. Well, you've just ensured that there will be no competent lawyers coming out of Washington. That's probably not fair. It's not, because they're going back to a colonial time-tested, method, partnering up with a mentor. But you have to ask yourself, who are the mentors that these people are partnering up with? Are they going to attach young newbie attorneys to these extreme progressive Marxist leftist attorneys that are just going to teach them how to be Marxist leftist attorneys and how to hate people and how to promulgate racism even further? Probably. Oh, Washington. And then, the article goes on and talks about Oregon. Washington and Oregon are the only states to remove the bar exam over concerns about the equity of outcomes. In November, the Oregon Supreme Court approved an alternative licensing program with a goal to increase accessibility to and equity in the profession by removing unnecessary barriers. We got to get rid of these barriers. Oh boy. This is why. Okay, so maybe we're not winning in Oregon and Washington, but listen, if you live there and you love the country and you love humanity and you do enjoy being a competent individual, link arms with somebody to stand up against this nonsense. It's nonsense across the board. Find yourself a grassroots organization that's willing to fight for what is right, what is true, what is good, and what is beautiful in your state. If you live in Washington or Oregon, I implore you, I encourage you to do it. All right, there's other good news happening out there. I mean, there's other examples of incompetence, but there's good news. I'm not sure what to get to first, but we will pick it up on the other side of this break. Thank you for joining me. You're listening to The Dean's List on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Lean, pure, with premium ingredients. Global Healing's pure plant protein offers 20 grams of protein per scoop, and it's the perfect way to maintain and build lean muscle while indulging yourself. It combines enzymes and probiotics to maximize nutrient absorption, improving digestion and your gut health. Available in vanilla and chocolate flavors, elevate your protein consumption while supporting your overall wellness with pure plant protein. Go to AmericaOutLoud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global Healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutLoud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back to The Dean's List. Thank you for joining me today. You are listening to America Out Loud Talk Radio. You can find us here Monday through Friday at the 2 p.m. Eastern time slot. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for being a part of the Out Loud family, America Out Loud. You know it. It's where smart people go to get their news and information. So congratulations on being one of the smart ones. This is a smart audience. This is, and as I said in the last segment, if you live in Washington or Oregon and you're listening to this program or to anything on America Out Loud, frankly, I implore you, I encourage you, get with people of like mind, link arms, find yourselves a grassroots organization that you can count on and depend on, and go after saving your state. Go after saving your locale. It's got to start locally. We take the country back by doing it locally. Start small and grow it. So I've been talking about this group, Don't Mess With Our Kids, and they actually started small and locally in Oregon. Yeah, Portland, Oregon. A lady by the name of Jenny Donnelly was, watching her cities in Oregon be destroyed. I think she's in Portland. And she just started praying and asking God, what can I do? How can I help? And, from that movement or from those prayers, this movement, Don't Mess With Our Kids, has grown. It actually, started in, I think, Peru. I think the country is Peru. A man by the name of Christian and his sister, they decided to take a stand at what was happening. And they rallied local communities. They rallied businesses in their local communities and families. And they marched and they took a stand, and it grew nationally to the point where in Peru, they were able to, as a citizenry, oust the leftist government there, and this is what's happening here in America. This movement has grown just from a small little grassroots in Oregon to the point now where on April 13th, in every capital in every state, including Washington, D.C., there's a rally April 13th from 1 to 3 p.m. And it's a rally that's going to include a time of worship, a time of prayer, a time of testimony, a time of encouragement, a time of repentance, just a time of let's refocus our hearts back to God. And this movement is growing and starting because of the kids. Because of what's happening, what the news is now showing. And that's why the name of the movement is Don't Mess With Our Kids. And it just started small. But it's grown. It's grown big. It's grown nationally. But the starting point is always locally. It's always small. Link arms with somebody. And this is the way we do it. This is the way we take it back. This is the way we go about it. It just takes a person. It just takes somebody with a Patrick Henry type attitude. Somebody I've talked about this quite a bit. Patrick Henry goes to the House of Burgesses, the Stamp Act in 1765. The Stamp Act has been passed. He's upset about it. And he hears other people talking about it. The country's upset about it. And he goes to the House of Burgesses and behind closed doors, the senior members of the House are upset and they're talking a big game, but no one's willing to make a public stand. And Patrick Henry does that. He authors some resolutions in the form of legislation that is very much anti-British, anti-king. And at the time, Virginia was a royal colony, which meant they were under the direct control of the king. What the king said went, and there were men in that legislative body that were afraid. They didn't want to speak out against the king. They didn't want to speak out against anything that the king would impose because they didn't want to, we can't be seen as disloyal to the king. No, we can't. No, we've got to be seen as supportive to the king. We can talk, you know, we can be upset behind closed doors, but in public, the united front in support of the king. No, and Patrick Henry, you know, he shows up and he has a different attitude about him. He has a different way about him. And it's that way that ultimately, you know, there's this debate in the House of Burgess about his resolutions. The debate is finally successful, and it's a narrow margin, but people come along the side of Patrick Henry, and it lights a fire and it lights a flame throughout the entire colonies, because Virginia is seen and deemed as the big colony. I mean, Virginia is the big dog or the big player in this thing. And Virginia's gonna pass these resolutions against the Stamp Act. And it lit a fire. It lit a fire through the colonies. And, you know, a year or two later, the Stamp Act gets repealed. The Parliament finally, they crack, they buckle under the pressure. And there's some internal things going on even in Parliament. You know, you've got some people over there that aren't the best and the brightest. And so, but this it's this perfect storm, and it's triggered. It started by one man, one lone voice, who has the courage to speak out. Small, mind you. It's just, he's just doing it locally. He's doing it in his own colony. But it spreads, and that's how it happens. That lone voice rises up. I mean, you know, we saw what happened to Planet Fitness last week. I just, you know, this one lady speaks out against this man in the bathroom. And lo and behold, here we are a little bit later. And Planet Fitness is down to the tune of $400 million. Anyone write that down, by the way? Anyone buy those put options and make money off of Planet Fitness on the way down? You know, be educated, educate yourself in everything, even economics, so you can understand and learn how you can make money on the way down when these leftist organizations start to fold. All right. If you're not opposed to making money off of leftist organizations that are folding, I don't know. Some people don't want to make money off of filth, and I get that. I do. I totally get that. I understand it. But the point is, educate yourself. There are several points here. Don't be afraid to stand up, make a stand, let your voice be heard, and also educate yourself along the way. Understand the times. Look around. Understand your community. I've got an article here of parents who do not understand UC Berkeley. They don't get it. All right. UC Berkeley. Okay. If you listen, moms and dads, if you are looking for a college, do not. I'm just, all right. I can't tell you what to do, but it's my suggestion. I wouldn't send my child to UC Berkeley or Harvard or any of these. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't pay the money, because all they're going to do is destroy your kid and rob you blind along the way. So parents here at UC Berkeley have to raise money to provide private security to patrol the area around campus. Should it be the responsibility of parents who pay tuition, by the way? I mean, probably, mostly, maybe, I don't know. Maybe they don't pay tuition. Maybe their child is, I don't know, scholarshiped or whatever. Now, let's assume that they're paying tuition. Should they have to raise 40 grand to pay for a patrol outside the campus? And it's only going to last for a couple of weeks, because that's far as the money's going to go. It's not like it's in perpetuity. They're hoping that the college will pick up the program once they run out of money in a couple of weeks. You think the college is going to do that? No, the college isn't going to do that. The college, if you read through the article, the college defunded their campus police. Let's see, page 2 of this article, Mr. Jathani, who is the parent, who's been spearheading this movement, Jathani. He says, in one incident this February, an unhinged man fired 9 rounds. Or this is not him saying this. This is from the article. The article is quoting, or the article, the author of the article is making this statement. In one incident this February, an unhinged man fired 9 rounds on the campus, but students were not alerted through the university's emergency alert system until nearly 40 minutes after the shooting took place. Well, that's interesting. It takes 40 minutes to send out an alert that there's this unhinged individual on campus. Everybody take cover 40 minutes after the fact. And so Jathani is now going to make a quote on this. He says that's because they don't have enough officers. Noting that while the campus police would ideally provide security throughout the campus, it could take years to restore the police department to its full strength after a years-long push to defund it. The University of California Police Department now has 46 sworn officers, almost half from about 80 officers a decade ago. And then Jathani says, we're all very impressed that with all the Nobel Prizes that UC Berkeley has earned, but what are they doing about student safety? Yeah, well, of course, towards the end of the article, it really gets to the meat of it. Where is it? It says here that Berkeley Mayor Jesse Erguin, I'm going to destroy your last name, Erguin. This mayor of Berkeley has recently vowed to form a regional task force to address the spike in crimes across the entire East Bay, promising greater coordination and regional strategies to deter criminals. All right, so that's what this mayor is promising. But 4 years ago, this same mayor created a plan that would defund the police to the tune of $9.2 million. All right, the article says that the mayor's plan came about 4 years after he, the mayor, defunded $9.2 million from the Berkeley Police Department, which is about 12% of the agency's annual operating budget. And this happened 4 years ago. What was going on 4 years ago? Oh, it was the summer of love, 2020. This was amid the nationwide discussion of racism and police brutality in the aftermath of the death of George Floyd. It awakened America's collective consciousness to the systemic racism that pervades our society, he wrote at the time. Yes, this racism pervades our society from education and housing to employment and, of course, policing. So we must defund the police. And so here we are. Okay, there is, it's happening on purpose, but yet the people that are doing it believe they can get away with it because the people are incompetent. All right, let me rephrase that to make it sound more concise and succinct. The people in charge are destroying the country on purpose because they believe the people who are the underlings, the people who are being controlled and ruled, are too incompetent to notice. And that's where we're at. And they believe the people are too incompetent to notice because they have been destroying education on purpose for decades to create a very incompetent citizenry. That's the point. That's the objective. Let's have a citizenry that's super dumb, just super stupid, so we can, so we can tell them, we have to take away your security because your security is racist. The police that are here to protect and defend and serve you, they're all racist. They're horrible. We shouldn't pay them anymore. We should defund them. So they have to go away. Uh-huh. And then crime's just going to skyrocket. So here we are 4 years later, and this Berkeley mayor vows to form a regional task force to address the spike in crime across the entire East Bay, promising greater coordination and regional strategies to deter criminals. Dean, you be nice. Yeah, you be nice. All right. This mayor here is a moron. Dean, you're not being nice. He's a moron. I'm telling you, just my inner Cynthia is coming out. She's telling me to be nice, but I am being nice. I'm being as nice as humanly possible. This man takes away $9.2 million, guts 12% of the police budget in Berkeley, and then there's a spike in crime, and we wonder why, and then he says, I'm going to put a plan for greater coordination and regional strategies. Then you've got these parents that send their kids to UC Berkeley that have to raise the money to have a security because the mayor, oh boy. So this group here at UC Berkeley, they're calling their names Safe Bears. Safe Bears is a nonprofit organization that describes itself as comprising of 1,300 plus Cal parents and community allies working to improve safety for UC Berkeley students. Isn't it the job of your local government to provide safety for the residents of the community? And when the local government is derelict of their duty, that at that point, that local government should be removed. There should be recalls across the board. Why isn't this happening in Berkeley? Why isn't this mayor being recalled, who 4 years ago took almost $9.5 million from the police department? So now you've got parents here at Berkeley that have to raise the money and call themselves Safe Bears. But here's the thing. This group, they refer to themselves as safety ambassadors, right? Safe Bears private security pilot is inspired by and modeled after a long-running program at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles, which has hired security ambassadors to patrol the school's perimeter. When USC deploys its safety ambassadors, they wear bright yellow jackets, just like ours, Jathani told the Epoch Times. We're covering some of the areas that have been the site of high crime activities, some of the darker areas around campus where students are concerned about walking alone. The safety ambassadors at Berkeley, like their USC counterparts, do not carry a gun, pepper spray, baton, or handcuffs. They have no way of defending themselves. Not even pepper spray. Their role is to provide a visual deterrence to any threats against students. If they encounter a situation that starts to escalate, they are equipped with radios and can call each other. Why would they call each other? Nobody has any way to defend themselves. Or they can call Berkeley police for assistance. Okay, I mean, you can call the police, but it's going to take them 40 minutes to get there. Even though the yellow jackets are unarmed, their presence seemed to provide students and families a much-needed sense of security. Okay, and that's all it's doing. It's providing a sense of security. It's not actually providing security. Now, all right, I get it. It could deter a would-be criminal if they see other people. All right, that is a possibility. I'm not discounting that. Well, actually, I am, but I shouldn't be discounting that because there's something to be said for that. But once the would-be criminal realizes that, you know, I can probably take this guy. He's not armed, and I am. You know, I know the criminals aren't that bright. They're kind of stupid themselves, but eventually they're going to figure it out. They're going to come to some conclusions here. And it's my point that the parents of UC Berkeley should not have to raise $40,000 to put some person in a yellow jacket to walk around unarmed because there's not enough police in the area. And the parents have pleaded, and here's the thing. The parents have pleaded, and I'm coming up on the break here. The parents have pleaded with Berkeley to offer to help them. to pay for police. The article says the parents' calls for increased security at committee meetings and hearings are often met with financial excuses. When we talk to the UC Berkeley administration about the kind of safety improvements it needs to make, we're often told that they don't have enough money, that there's a budget shortfall, and that if only they had more funds, they would do all these measures and more, if only they had more money. However, and here's the kicker, on March 6th, the same day Safe Bear's ambassador's boots hit Berkeley streets, the university announced what it called an impressive end of its fundraising campaign with more than $7.3 billion, with a B, billion raised. They just finished a fundraising campaign that raised $7.3 billion, the largest total in history for any public university and for any university that doesn't have a medical school. But yet, they don't have enough money to pay for a police force that is adequate enough. So Jathani says, so what that tells us parents is that the school has money and that they just don't view student safety as an investment worth spending that money on. We wish that were not the case. All right, so what are you going to do about it? Here's what you do about it. You pull your child. You tell your son or daughter, look, you're going to go to someplace that cares about you, someplace that cares about your safety, not just about their pocketbook. And that's not happening. It's not happening at UC Berkeley. And it's not happening because they don't think that people are going to do anything about it. All right, I'm up against the break. We will pick this up on the other side. You're listening to The Dean's List on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Many voices, one freedom, united in the First Amendment. Our goal is to herald the voice of genuine liberty at AmericaOutloud.news, a place where you'll find the naked truth expressed with a patriotic heart. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of the toxic spike protein. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed their spike support formula to counteract harmful spike protein from COVID-19 and vaccines so you can feel your best. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death and disability. Lifestyle changes are critical, but you can also support your heart with concentrated nutrients. Healthy Cell created Heart and Vascular Health to support cholesterol and blood pressure with CoQ10, vitamin K2, resveratrol, and soluble fiber. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow. Get heart healthy. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
ASEA believes that inside each of us is the potential to feel our very best. Our redox-based products tap into reserves within you to power your personal well-being. Make our breakthrough products an essential step in fulfilling your greatest potential. ASEA, we power potential. For exclusive savings, use code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your first order today.
Welcome back. We're happy to have you on board with us today. Thank you for listening. No matter how you listen, whether it be in podcast form or live through the app or at AmericaOutloud.news via the world-class media player or iHeartRadio or any of the other modes out there, no matter how you're listening, we're grateful that you are. Thank you for being on board. Thank you for being one of the smart ones and making it to the Dean's List. Yep. I went a little long in that last segment. Sometimes when I just I come across this stuff that just makes me scratch my head, makes me wonder, Is it incompetence at the top, or does the top know what they're doing and they just think there's incompetence underneath? I mean, there's probably a little bit of both. But my hunch is the top knows what they're doing and they just think they can get away with it because they've destroyed education for so long that they just think that the people below them are incompetent and aren't going to see, aren't going to recognize, aren't going to notice. You know, and even though they do notice, like what's happening at Berkeley, even though parents do notice, you know, what are they going to do? They're going to go raise $40,000 to have a person wear a yellow jacket for 3 weeks, unarmed, not even pepper spray, not even a whistle. I mean, he's got a radio, so he can call someone else who's unarmed. Or he can call the Berkeley police, wherein it'll take them an hour to get there. Or 40 or too long. I can tell you that. So it just frustrates me. However, there is good news on the front. There is good news out there. U.S. marriage rates rise to pre-pandemic levels. This is a report. And this report comes from the CDC, and that kind of bothers me. You know, the Center for Disease Control, why are they reporting on marriage? Why is this something that they would be concerned about? Do they think marriage is a disease? Marriage rates in the United States returned to pre-pandemic levels, with divorce rates continuing a declining trend, according to the CDC. Anyone else intrigued by why the CDC is concerned about this? Anyone? Bueller? In 2022, the United States witnessed a significant uptick in the number of marriages, reaching a total of just over 2 million, the CDC said in its March 15th blog post. All right, so this is a recent blog post, but they're referring to data from 2022. This was the first time that marriages exceeded the 2 million mark since 2019. The rate of marriage in 2022 also saw a significant increase, hitting 6.2 per 1,000 individuals, which is the highest since 2018. The states with the highest marriage rates were Nevada, Hawaii, Montana, Utah, and Arkansas. Across the nation, 36 states and the District of Columbia reported marriage rates in 2022 that either matched or exceeded the levels seen in 2019 before the onset of COVID-19. Noteworthy is the uptick in marriage rates from 21 to 22 in 31 states and the District of Columbia. So this, again, the CDC is, I don't know if they're reporting this as good news, as bad news, or just information. The most substantial percentage increase in 2022 compared with 21 occurred in New York, the District of Columbia, and Hawaii. Nevada maintained its status as the state with the highest marriage rate in 2022. The number and rate of divorces were found to have declined in 2022, which the CDC says was continuing a longstanding downtrend. So why is this good news? Well, it's good news because marriages create families, and families are the foundational structure of society. Matter of fact, the article, you know, continues on, and at some point they're quoting someone by the name of Kearney, Melissa Kearney. She's an economist with the Brookings Institute. And she says, marriage most benefits children. Millions of kids outside the college-educated class are growing up with only one parent. They're less likely to graduate high school. They're less likely to graduate college. They're less likely to be married themselves and have higher earnings as adults. She says this is a major sort of source of perpetuation of intergenerational advantage and disadvantage. So there's an advantage and disadvantage of marriage. I think mostly there is an advantage. And the advantage is that you create a family. And the family is the foundation of American society. And this is how we put the society back together is through families. She is also quoted here as saying a large percentage of children in the African American community lack fathers while growing up. And fatherhood is important. But the left will tell you, yeah, parents, yeah, they're caregivers. You know, they're not important. Yeah, dads are buffoons. You know, who needs them? But parents, fathers specifically, mothers as well, they're bedrocks to this society. So the fact that marriage is on the uptick and we've hit, you know, we're back to the pre-pandemic levels of 2019, 2018, is to me is encouraging. It's good news. It's another example of how we're winning. And I say we stay at it. Keep having babies. Let's go. Come on. Let's get out there. Let's go. Let's have some fun, right? It's important. Families are the foundational bedrock of this society, and they happen through marriage. They are promoted, promulgated, supported, created via marriage. Oh, this is such good news. And the left can't be happy about it. They can't be happy about it. They've got to be out there because, well, they don't, they're all about population control. They don't want humanity on the planet. Well, the planet would be surviving much better without humanity. So they've got to be upset about this. But I'm not upset about it. It's good news. We need to stay at it. There's good news out there. There's good news, and it's important that we keep our chins up. It's important that we stay educated. It's important that we link arms with somebody of like mind, like values. Get out there and share your values. Make your values known. And let's start local. Let's have a family. Let's raise kids. Let's start local. Let's take this country back. All right. We're going after it, kids. That's all the time we have for today, America. Thank you for joining me. Encourage your friends and family to get on the Dean's List. Let's unite to renovate the age.